Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're talking about Anthony Davis being the friend that LeBron really needs. Deshaun Watson got people calling him Michael Jordan. And since y'all didn't call up with y'all's Michael Jordan stories, I got to review the Kanye album. But first, all right, man, the NBA season has begun. We did our preview last week with my man Vinny Goodwill, and we talked a little bit about the Warriors. We didn't really talk about the Warriors because I think in part we weren't exactly sure what to say about the Warriors, but we both kind of had them as like a team that could probably make the playoffs, but I don't think any of us were that, like, we weren't that charged up about what their fate was going to be. And then they came out here in these first 2 games of the season and got beat. Down, 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 down. Beat them down was cascading through the halls. So, Gabe, how do you say you put it? Kawhi Leonard shut down Oracle and then messed up the grand opening?
Yeah, I mean, technically it wasn't the grand opening because they did that Metallica show, yeah, you know, like last week. But it's the grand opening. Come on, it's the first game.
The grand opening. And he brought the heat to them. And so the Warriors, lucky for them, though, they got to play against the Pelicans last night, and when they played against the Pelicans were down their top 3 players, and so the Warriors wound up winning. The game before, they played against the Thunder, and the Thunder beat them by about a zillion points. But I wanted to juxtapose a couple things for you right fast. First, we got your man Draymond Green, and this was Draymond Green after they got beaten by 28 points by the Thunder. This is what he had to say.
The reality is we suck right now. You know, hopefully we'll get better. We'll continue working at it and try to get better, but we just not that good right now. I don't know what better way to frame that for you. You know, I could try in Spanish, but I ain't really that good in Spanish. That's really the best way I can tell it to you right now.
You got to appreciate the honesty, right? Right? Like, is that where we are with Draymond? Like, I appreciate the honesty there. He was right. As of that point, they sucked. Right? Look, man, them boys weren't out here playing good. It happens. They stink. At least they look like they stunk in the first 2 games. And, bruh, I don't know, Gabe, if you have looked at a Warriors box score.
I have not yet.
To try to identify who some of these people are who play for them. All right, so, like, I'm going in one of these where the box score gives you first initial, last name, right? You know who D. Russell is. You know who G. Robinson 3 is, although you probably didn't know he was starting for the Warriors. You know who D. Green is. You know who S. Curry is. Are you up on J. Poole?
Deadpool, J. Poole, 354.
Yeah, how about D. Lee?
Yep, no.
E. Pascal?
Pascal Siakam?
No, E. Pascal.
No.
All right, O. Spellman?
No, Amari Spellman.
Yeah, I was up on him. M. Chris was up on him. K. Bowman?
You're abbreviating the first name to make it more mysterious.
I'm just saying what it looks like to me as I read the box score. Okay, okay. Right? J. Evans 3, you up on him?
Jared Evans? Jared?
Let's find out. Jacob Evans.
Jacob Evans. No. Okay.
Former first round pick. Did you know that?
No.
I did not. Now, look, you juxtaposed this against the Pelicans. I know who all these dudes are by first name, last initial, except for like 2. I'm unfamiliar with this K. Williams who put up 16 last night. His name is Kenrick Williams. Kenrick. I don't know. You ever heard of him? Because I hadn't.
Nope.
He apparently went to TCU. I didn't know they still had a basketball team. But I know who all the Pelicans are. The only one, some N. Melly. He must be from another country. Niccolo Melly. Yeah, school none. He's from somewhere else. But the Warriors got a bunch of dudes. I don't know who they are. And so Draymond's like, yo, we suck right now. And they do, because they can't guard anybody. Like, that's the big thing with them. They can't guard anybody. I mean, I imagine we're going to get to a point where Steph's going to come out here and he's going to be Steph, right? He's too great a player for it to not be that, even though he started the season slowly in those first 2 games. I want to say he was 4 for 10 for 3 in the game against the Pelicans. So I imagine that, I mean, things are going to turn up a bit. D'Angelo Russell has been, at the very least, not bad. You know, that's kind of what you hope for in a circumstance like this. But then they got to just go depend on a bunch of other dudes, and these other dudes are not good. But they got their win. Good for them. They came up, got themselves a victory. And listen to what Steph Curry had to say after they got their victory.
Everybody loves to label you when you're down and when you're losing. That's easy. It's easy to get on TV and say whatever you want. It's easy to just, you know, throw darts at a team that's trying to figure it out based on how much, you know, success we've had. So I'd hope people could start to see through that. and understand what we're about as a team and what we're going to build towards. That's basically it. If you want to get on, say whatever you want to say, fill that 24-hour news cycle, that's cool with us. We still going to hoop and just play basketball.
Bro, what else are we supposed to do, man? Y'all out here getting beat by 30 points? Y'all got beat by almost 30 by the Thunder. Y'all got beat by the Dub, by the Clippers. What you want us to say?
Yeah, man, you just got to fill up that news cycle.
You know what's funny? You ain't had no problem with us filling up the news cycle when y'all was winning all those games and all we talked about is how y'all was revolutionizing basketball. That was easy to do too, right?
Like, oh, so it's easy to pick on a team when they losing.
It's easy to talk about a team when they winning, but don't nobody complain about us taking the easy way out when we talking about you winning. If we try to do it in a complex way when you winning, then you jokers come around and say that we hating. Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, it's just easy to pick on a team when they down and lose.
Yeah, dog, it's our fault. It's everybody else's fault that y'all out here looking sorry. Okay, got it, right? It's everybody else's fault. Gabe, I'll talk about D'Angelo Russell not looking so bad. He ain't look so bad in that first game. You want to guess what D'Angelo Russell's shooting from the floor? 38%? And I ain't talking about on threes. I'm talking about all of them. My man putting up 38%. He's shooting like 35 from three. Let's get a look at Steph here, since it's just easy for us. Steph putting up a 24 points in 30 minutes. I guess that's pretty impressive. He's also putting up all the turnovers again. Because, see, this is one thing about the Warriors that got lost is that as much as everybody wants their kid to play like Steph Curry, you don't want your kid to play like Steph Curry. Steph loose with the ball. All right, like Steph's always been a turnover guy. He's going to give you the ball back. You could do that with the team they had before. You can't do that with this team now. Like, he's going to need to get his situation in check because you just can't kick it like that on this particular team. It's not our fault that you're shooting 27% from three. Are you going to shoot 27% from three for the whole year? Probably not. We do reasonably expect that that's going to improve. But it's not our fault that you out here playing with a bunch of dudes that we ain't never heard of. Like, what's going to be interesting about the Warriors, for me, what does Kerr have? Right? Because what Kerr did was, and I'm not saying this is shade because this is wildly impressive. Kerr took a 50-win team and turned them into a 70-win team within 2 years. And so, like, adding 20 wins to a 20-win team, like, going from 20 to 40, that's one thing. Going from 50 to 70, like, I think they went from, like, 51 to 67 in Kerr's first year, and they went from 67 to 73 in the second one. That ain't easy to do. Like, that's significant, and he deserves all the credit in the world for unleashing what was there, because it wasn't like they had some major roster upgrades when they did that. They just changed the way that they played. They continued something that started with Mark Jackson, which is Steph Curry starting to shoot more threes, shooting 7-8 threes a game. Like, that had begun in the previous regime. And then he carried that out, put an offense around it. They became a great defensive team. Lakob was willing to put whatever it was around the team to make it better, and one of his complaints about Mark Jackson was he was offering all this help and all these resources and Mark Jackson didn't want it. So you got there. But this, now you got to coach a whole different kind of team. And just because Kerr was built for the team that they had at first doesn't mean that he's built for coaching this team that they have right now. Like, this team they have right now is going to take a whole lot of elbow grease from him. This is not just going to be a matter of figuring out how to manage the personalities to get the most out of everybody, and your scheme is going to win out just, you know, because you have such spectacular talent. You got three of the greatest shooters of all time. That's a whole different ball game than when you're just out here with Steph and a bunch of dudes. So what you got? What are you going to be the guy to provide with this team? That's what it is that's going to be very interesting to see. We're also going to see something that we haven't seen in quite a while, which is Draymond Green playing for a team that isn't really good. How does that go over? Because he ain't built for all this losing. He ain't built to stand this. He also appears to have shown up out of shape. Except you hope that what it is that he's showing up out of shape, as opposed to maybe he's looking cooked. Because I don't see this. And Gabe, you tell me if I'm tripping here. That dude, you can't show up out of shape this year.
Yeah, there's no working your way into shape while the team just wins games with you operating at like 80%.
No, you knew what this team was. You knew what this team was going to be. They needed every drop that they could get out of you. This when if he did show up out of shape, that would be a staggering indictment. He had a great game against the Pelicans, by the way, 16, 17, and 10. But it would be a staggering indictment if he showed up out of shape. But also, it's him and Steph. Like, this is what we got right now. Klay Thompson maybe comes back at the end of this year. I'm not betting on it, but that's what you have right now. Is this collection of dudes. You got to be the one that shows up the whole way. So how's it going to go with this team in the face of adversity? Because this whole season is basically adversity. This whole season is a carryover of the adversity from last year, right? And imagine what it's like being Joe Lacob, Gabe. Imagine being that dude who finally built this glowing arena and you couldn't wait to show it off to all your rich Silicon Valley friends and all the guys that went to Stanford Business School. You just couldn't wait to show them everything you got. And your arena is beautiful, baby, beautiful. And then y'all go out here getting wrecked. Getting wrecked. Let's see who they play next. Oh, they play Phoenix. Ooh, they better not lose that one. Can you imagine how embarrassing that'll be?
I mean, the Suns are hot right now.
Yeah, didn't they beat somebody the other day, right?
Yes, they did.
Somebody. That's where we are with the Suns. I don't even have to identify. Like, yeah. Yo, they beat. Whoa, they are 2-1.
Yeah.
They beat the Clippers.
The hot boys in the Valley of the Sun.
Yeah, that's where they are. Nah, look at this, though. They're 2-1, and their one loss was by, or 2-2, rather, and their two losses were by a combined 2 points. And maybe they'll beat the Warriors, because I ain't going to lie, Steph, you're right. We got 24 hours to fill, and we can't do nothing with y'all beating the Suns. But y'all losing to the Suns? Oh, baby, you'll be right back here on this podcast. Stay tuned. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about LeBron's ridiculous hair. But first, Bowling Branch Sheets. You guys really, really, really have to check these out. There's so many good things that I can tell you about them. They are the softest and most comfortable sheets in the world, and the only bedding loved by 3 U.S. presidents. Now, for a limited time, you can get their luxury flannel bedding. It keeps you cool sleepers warm, and because it breathes, it also keeps warm sleepers cool. You wouldn't expect that out of flannel, but it takes care of you in all seasons. The shipping is free. You can try them out for 30 nights, risk-free. And right now, you get $50 off your first set of sheets at BowlingBranch.com with promo code Jones. That's right. $50 off. You got to think about this with sheets. As much time as you spend in your sheets, you should make them the best that you could possibly make them. And we're making it easier for you to get those sheets. Get $50 off at BowlingBranch.com, promo code Jones. That's B-O-L-L and branch.com, code Jones. All right, so, Gabe, you are our resident Los Angeles Lakers fan. Are you enjoying the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I'm kind of on a wait-and-see approach. I feel like a lot of people were throwing out lofty predictions for this team, I should say. Mm-hmm. I've always been of the wait-and-see approach because this team is not a finished product right now.
Are you enjoying the return of Dwight?
You know what? He played kind of nice the other night, and people are like, yeah, Dwight, but I'm not a huge fan of what he brings to the team.
You don't like rebounds?
We have too many fives. Like you said last week, you know, AD needs to be playing the five, but he just doesn't want to be playing the five.
Yes.
It all comes down to what's going to happen in the playoffs. And if AD is going to be playing the five in the playoffs and he just needs someone else, like a body, to be playing the five right now so he doesn't take that physical toll, then I guess I'm okay with it being Dwight. But I don't want to see Dwight on the floor in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, what I think they can do is I think that if you only have LeBron or Anthony Davis on the floor, not both, then having Dwight out there can be very helpful, especially with Anthony Davis, because, I mean, that's a lot of defense that you're going to be able to play if you've got both of them. Good luck getting to the rim with Anthony Davis and Dwight, even at Dwight as an older player. Like, I think that's a win, right? Like, you got those dudes out there, but, dude, the fans are cheering for him. He's out here, like, doing the finger wag to the crowd and everything else. Like, Dwight is finally feeling the love that he has craved for so long. He is finally feeling the love that he has craved. Kind of sort of good for him, right? He looks ridiculous with that little hairdo and all the tattoos that he got in his 30s, which, you know, midlife crisis, whatever. But you got something there. And you got the LeBron-Anthony Davis thing. And, yes, I think Anthony Davis has to play the five because they without him playing the five, you got JaVale McGee out there. JaVale McGee can't do nothing but stand around the paint, and then that's just going to make life hard for everybody else. So, like, we're on the same page on that one. But Anthony Davis, I think, by the way, do you know Anthony Davis' usage rate so far this year is 34?
That's a high usage rate.
Yeah, like we said, LeBron said he was going to put this around Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis' usage rate is at 34, but LeBron's is at 30. Like, they are definitely allowing him to get busy when it is time for them to get busy. But Anthony Davis, I think, has demonstrated a greater value to LeBron than any of us probably ever saw coming at first. And you know what that is. You saw Anthony Davis told LeBron that his hair was out of place.
Yeah, I saw it. And in that video, it's kind of hard to see what's out of place. But then when you start clicking on the articles and looking up at the screenshots, it's like, oof.
Look, man, all I know is this. LeBron went back to the headband. Remember, he had gone away from the headband in Cleveland. I guess he was too mature for that at that point. LeBron went back to the headband, and the headband had slowed down. And Anthony Davis, if you look at that clip, he didn't tell him, A-Dog, your headband. He told him, A-Dog, your hair. Your hair. Has LeBron had another teammate who was in a position to tell him that his weave was out of place?
What about D-Wade in Cleveland?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, was their relationship in the place where he could, like, full-on do that? Like, I have to say, it makes me feel better about LeBron if everybody gets to pick on him about his ridiculous hair situation. Because LeBron, I understand what LeBron's problem is, man. He got that big old water head, and it ain't even really well-shaped. Therefore, he does not have the option of coming on home like I came on home. He can't quite do that. That ain't gonna look the same, right? Like, him out there, you imagine LeBron out there with the beard and just trying to be all the way bald? I don't think that would work. But you know what I think maybe work for LeBron that I would find to be interesting? What if he just let his hairline go back and he just rocked out the George Jefferson? We haven't had an NBA player, at least not an African-American one, who rocked out the George Jefferson in quite a while. Maybe he could be a whole new trend, right? Like, there used to be a time where brothers could just come out here and just go bald, just like the white man does. But we don't get to just go bald like that. We got to shave it down. We got to do all these tricks. We got to get on to Beijing, all of this stuff. Nah, I feel like a man like LeBron should be free to just go ahead and look like, world be free. Yeah, world be free. That was how he kicked it. I feel like he should be allowed to do that.
You seen Caruso's hair?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, man. There is a white privilege when it comes to balding that the brother man will never be able to experience. We just be letting white folks lie for that, man. We don't have they ain't no omnipresent look at his hairline discussion about white people. You ever notice that? It's only us. And look, it be your own people. Like, I'm not saying that the white man has forced this upon us. We do this to ourselves. Now, I will say that the white man does like to jump in and participate in the conversation, as the white man often wants to do when brothers just over here just trying to chat amongst ourselves, and then they got caught up like, oh, this hairline thing is bad. And so they out here trying to identify. But they don't be saying nothing about it when it's their homies and their hair is running all the way to the back. That's right. And I know why they don't do that. They don't do that because the white man does not simply have the option of coming on home in the same way. It don't look the same. It can often have different level of connotation. And in fact, once Phil Jackson was writing for ESPN, the magazine, one of those years when he wasn't working, and the Pacers, I remember this, the 99 Pacers, they all went bald, like as a show of solidarity. And Phil Jackson said they all look like somebody turned on a light bulb. It was like Chris Mullin. You know, Chris Mullin had that buzz cut forever. Nah, Chris Mullin was out here with the light bulb turned on. He's talking about Chris Mullin. Rick Smits. Rick Smits was out there with the bald head. Yeah, man. Nah, it's a whole different situation there, man. Like, you're right. Your man Caruso. How old is Caruso, by the way? I feel like his situation shouldn't be that.
Caruso's 25.
Oh,
man.
Well, that's a damn shame.
Oh, boy.
That's a damn shame.
Yeah, that is a shame.
And you notice he ain't even trying to do nothing to make the situation better, right?
No, he's not.
But that's how good it is being white, man. You just come out here looking bald and don't nobody say nothing about it, man. If I went out here in my natural state, y'all be clowning me left and right.
Wouldn't you imagine that his friends are ribbing him, though?
Caruso?
Yeah, because there's a difference also, too, between, like, your friends ribbing you and or the national media ribbing you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I guess I don't know, like, the interpersonal communications among the Caucasian American community about these matters. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Like, is that something? Because I know, man, my friends would be messing with me on this stuff, except I was always honest about the fact. I knew I was holding on. I told people very clearly I was holding on because I knew once I stopped, there wasn't no going back. So I was going to enjoy them hair growing years as long as I possibly could, right? And I don't feel good about cheating. I don't really need much, by the way, man. I just need a little bit up here in the corners. We're starting to run the diamond in one up there. But if I could just get somebody up there in the corners, man, everything would be taken care of. You know, like the flat route. Like that. That's wide open every time, man. You can throw the ball in the flat every time against me, and I feel like I deserve better than that, right? But no, it's cool. It's cool.
Well, there's levels to this stuff, right? Because you've got Caruso, who's thinning out up top.
Yes.
LeBron's thinning out back and receding up front.
Yeah.
And, like, people make fun of Stephen A because his hairline's, you know, running back a little bit, right?
Yeah, but in the back of Stephen A's head, he's straight.
Yeah, so that's a different thing.
Yeah, like, I saw him, actually saw Stephen A getting a haircut yesterday. He had his barber come up here and take care of him.
At least you can still get a lineup and stuff.
Yeah, like, he doesn't have the yarmulke, right? He's not out there on that Manu. Remember when Manu was out there with the yarmulke?
That wasn't even a yarmulke. It was more like a donut because it was like a circular and then it had a hole in it.
Yes. And then by the time it got to the end, it was like the two fronts were approaching each other, like they was about to do battle on the top of his head. Like they was all just marching, you know, you take two steps, we take two steps. You know what I'm saying? Like it was that kind of thing. It was kind of like a duel. You go, I go. You go, I go. And at some point, somebody was going to shoot.
Now, here's the thing is when you think after a number of years of a guy having shaved his head, when he all of a sudden starts growing his hair back, like Caron Butler been rocking, you know, the dome top for like his whole career. And now he's got a high top fade now.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a guy I really want to be out here questioning.
Kenny the Jet Smith growing his hair back too.
I had not seen this. Yeah. Kenny's cheating too?
I saw that on the TNT broadcast. People were talking about it.
Kenny been bald since like 1994 or 5. What?
And your boy Getnick Wright, you know?
Well, people, okay, that's his hair.
I know, but that's people were talking about it.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, the problem, you know, Nick's my good friend. You know, the reason that people thought that Nick had just broke out the hairpiece is, you know, people don't all know that he's white. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah, not everybody knows that he's white. And so I think they had just figured, you know, that he was going on that sort of kick. Because you notice all this resuscitation in the hair growth is all the brothers. You know what I'm saying? So I guess they thought that Nick was just getting on the wave again and then jumped on that. But no, people are bringing their hair back. And I just feel like if I did that, they'd be clowning me. I would hope I have friends good enough to clown me. And that's what I feel like with LeBron. You got a friend that you close enough with who can hit you with the, hey, dog, your hair out of place. Right. He ain't even have to be slick and just be like, you know, like do something with his finger or something like that, like some signal, like woo woo. He didn't have to do that. He told him explicitly what it was. But you notice LeBron wasn't laughing when he did. He saw LeBron tried to play it cool.
Yes, I did. And also, too, the thing about it is you mentioned earlier with him going away from the headband back forth. He's got a bigger headband now.
Yes.
And it's not because at the beginning of the season, the NBA outlawed the like
what the ninja joint.
Well, yeah, what they're calling the ninja headbands, which is like a little cultural appropriation. Yes. But we digress. Right. But this one's kind of like a tight headband / ninja band, kind of bigger, but it's not headband material, so it covers up even more.
Would you be surprised if we found out later that LeBron had been working a behind the scenes lobbying campaign to get those ninja so-called ninja headbands back in action? Would that surprise you?
That would not surprise me one bit. Well, maybe this is a compromise that he worked out with the NBA where, okay, it's not got the little tie in the back, but it's still, you know, covering up the same surface area.
Yo, he's trying to do so much right now. And, I mean, I understand he in a different position than the rest of these cats, man. We'd be paying more attention to him. We see what happens with him in a way that we don't see it with other people. But I'm just glad like I've seen him joke about it before. But I'm glad that, like, we can all joke about it. At least I think we can all joke about it. Like, if Anthony Davis can do it, they don't really know each other that good, right? Like can everybody else? Like, what happens when JaVale McGee tries to joke on his hairline?
Have we ever seen an athlete fight hair recession as hard as LeBron has?
Is the question whether we've seen somebody fight it as hard or have we seen somebody look like they fighting it so hard? Like, I feel like other people are fighting it hard, but they're doing a better job of it. Like, what I can't understand is why he can't find a quality system that works with all that money he got.
There's a soccer player named Wayne Rooney. He used to play for Manchester United who, like, went bald at age, like, 18. And then all of a sudden at age 30-something, he decided to go to the hairpiece. And then he kept coming back. Exactly what's happening to LeBron. And it makes me just wonder if these two guys are the same ilk where it's just not going to happen for them up top and they need to let it go.
I wonder if LeBron just being cheap. Like, I remember at some point, my parents are older, right? Like, my dad was like 43 when I was born. And so I remember when I was younger, he had started trying to work that Grecian for a little bit. But my parents are cheap. And so I don't think he was willing to invest the amount of Grecian per use that was required to actually take it black. So it just wound up being like a Trump situation where it was darker. But it wasn't dark. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
And maybe that's LeBron. Maybe LeBron out here, this is where he's trying to go cheap. Like, you'll meet rich people like this, but you get to their house and they got one-ply toilet paper. And it's like, bruh, this ain't the place. Come on now. Right? You got us drinking out these crystal goblets, but you got me wiping my booty with a piece of notebook paper? Like, it can't be that. And maybe that's what LeBron is out here doing with that hairline. Here's what I wonder. What do you think Savannah think of all this? You know, when do you think she gave up?
One would hope that your significant other would be able to tell you when it's finally time, like, all right, Bron, this is enough.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel like she has told him. He just like, nah, baby, I'm good. And she's like, fine. Look however you want. I don't care. Look however you want. I don't care. We rich. Hey, Gabe, you ever seen somebody get kicked in the face before?
Not in person, no.
Okay, like, I was in either the 7th or 8th grade, and there was a dance at school. And after the dance, I don't remember how this fight got started in the parking lot. But it was like by the parking lot. It wasn't in the parking lot. But somehow a fight got started. And it wasn't even like a steady boxing match, except I don't know why this worked out this way, but there wound up being breaks, and one guy went on one side and one guy went on the other. And both sets of people wound up being like they wound up with entourages around them, because it was just a fight and we didn't really care. We just wanted to watch some people fight. And I'll never forget, the one dude looks up and is like, "Yo, I'm gonna go kick him in the face." And we're like, yeah, go kick him in the face. And he got a running start because that other dude wasn't paying attention. And he kicked that dude in the face. Like, he kicked him in the face with a running start. I have never seen anything quite like that before. Don't worry, the dude lived. He's straight. Though I wonder if he was ever the same, because I remember he got locked up later for making terroristic threats. Not black people, by the way. Anyway, getting kicked in the face is a monster. Deshaun Watson caught a cleat to the face in the middle of a play, got off the tackle, and went and threw a touchdown. It doesn't really get much more impressive than that, does it? Like there's certain like playing with injury or playing with pain type stuff. Like Emmitt Smith winning the division for the Cowboys, running for a zillion yards against the Giants in 1993 with a separated shoulder, right? Like that's some gold standard type stuff that you got there. Isaiah Thomas, 25 points in the fourth quarter on an ankle the size of a grapefruit. You know, we got that. Like, we got those sorts of things. But I don't know how much you're beating getting kicked in the face and then keeping it moving. And I got to say, you know, I don't necessarily blame the refs for not catching it. But for all the stuff you talk about doing to protect a quarterback, that ain't 15 yards. Let me tell you this right now, man. Tom Brady get kicked in the face, there will be a new rule. Don't you worry. Face kicking will cease once that happens. When Deshaun was coming out of college, Dabo Swinney said that this dude was Michael Jordan, which felt a bit extreme. Did you see what John Gruden said about Deshaun after the game on Sunday?
I did not.
He called him Michael Jordan. Now, is he the Michael Jordan of football? No. Like, I think we'd all safely say that. But the fact that he's actually reminding people of a Jordanian figure is pretty damn impressive. Now, I have been skeptical of Watson, and I still have a small measure of skepticism in his direction. And it's for two reasons. One, he doesn't really have a strong arm, and I'd prefer you have a strong arm. And two, he just holds the ball so long. And so I've had like real questions about how this is going to go down the line, what kind of adjustments people are going to make against him. Except we're kind of in year three now, and I feel like those things that I worried about seeing would have been more pronounced by now. Like, if I had my expectation of, like, I don't know if this is going to work out with Deshaun Watson, I would have seen a lot more of it halfway through his third year than I have seen. Like, he is, in fact, that dude. And not only is he that dude. All right, so let's do a little bit of an evolution in, like, the spread quarterback in the NFL and their, like, level of acceptance. All right? So the first just full-on spread quarterback I remember being taken first overall in the NFL draft was Sam Bradford. Because up until that point, the question had always been about whether these guys who never had to go into a huddle and never had to call plays in that way and had never taken snaps for center or anything, whether they could make the requisite adjustment to playing NFL football. And Bradford was the first one that came up in this, and people kind of let it slide. They're just like, oh, well, we think he'll figure it out. Okay. Then the next year, you got Cam Newton. And Cam came out and had one of the best rookie seasons we had ever seen at that point. But what it showed, and I know this for fact with Cam, what they told Cam as a rookie was like, yo, if it's man, throw it outside. If it's zone, throw it to the tight ends, because they had Shockey and Greg Olsen at the time. It was like, if it's man, throw it outside, as you go there. And Cam had like 4,000 yards that year. Or something like that, and 14 rushing touchdowns, like all kind of crazy stuff. And then we saw Cam make the gradual progression into the offense that, what's his name, Mike Shula was running. Which, you know, Mike Shula, he coached in college, but he is a pro-style offense guy. And then they went with that. And what we gradually learned there, and also, let me be clear here, we had some hiccups. Robert Griffin came in 2012, and he wasn't able to make the adjustment. Mariota, we have questions now about whether or not he has made the adjustment. But this happens to pro-style quarterbacks also. But my point is simply that the idea that you played in a spread, Cam kind of obliterated that the idea that learning an NFL offense was just so damn hard that these guys, in spite of their physical gifts, would not be able to get it. Nah. People seem to have gotten a better handle on this. These guys seem to be able to figure these things out better. And Watson, one question that people had was whether he was going to be able to come out and quote unquote read defenses, right? Then you saw him do that press conference. He was explaining to everybody what the defense was, what he was seeing, why he was doing things the way that he was doing them and everything else, right? Like, he got that done. He showed it. And now we're out here where this dude, really unlike anybody other than Michael Vick, where you see him out there and it's just like, yo, so what's Deshaun Watson good at? You know what he's really good at? Being Deshaun Watson. Like, the dude that gets the ball and you're like, okay, cool. Well, he'll go out there and figure something out. Like, he, somehow in the NFL, he is doing things that look very similar to Vince Young in college. Where Vince in college, it was just like, okay, I don't really care what play is called. I don't really care what routes anybody's going to run. I just know that we got this guy in the backfield. Right? Like, this is what I know. This guy has the ball, and he's going to be the one to figure this out. And I'm really trying to think of a guy that made me feel that way in the way that Watson does, right? I mean, of course, you probably feel the same way about Tom Brady, but I think you get that there's, like, a different quality to that. Like, Aaron Rodgers has a lot of that, but there's still, like, there's a different quality because, like, Aaron Rodgers has an arm that nobody has. Like, arm strength, accuracy, touch, all of those things. He's got something, that's something that people don't really have. Watson doesn't have that. Right? Like, that's not the physical gift that he has. And in fact, I would argue that, like, Watson moves, but Watson isn't super fast. Like, again, he's not Michael Vick or Lamar Jackson, right? Like, he's not one of those dudes. You just see him and you're like, yo, what? He's really, really good at being Deshaun Watson. And he's going to be the quarterback there for a very long time. If, you know, A, the Texans don't allow him to get killed by playing behind bad offensive line. And if he does not allow himself to be killed by holding on to the ball too long. But as of now, man, I don't really care how many games they win. It is incredible to watch. And did you know this, Gabe? The Texans, since Watson took over as starter, every loss they've had has been within one possession.
Yeah, they've been good when he's been healthy.
Right, but think about this. Every loss within one possession. They have not lost a 10-point game since he was the quarterback. Now, of course, the quarterback does not win or lose the game. But damn, that's impressive.
Yeah, I could look at it two ways, right? It's impressive, or also he's getting them there and then choking.
Knew a little hateration was going to have to pop up.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from tech.
Hey, this is Drew Harwell. I cover AI for the Washington Post, and I just wrote about hiring AI. It's artificial intelligence that employers are starting to use in the interview process. So if you apply for a job, instead of actually going through a first round interview with a human, you end up just looking into your webcam or your cell phone camera and answering some questions, and their AI system scans your face, scans your voice, and sort of makes a score for you on how employable you are based off of your facial expressions and the tone of voice you used, the words you decided to use. And so this report card ends up, you know, making or breaking the potential for you to get this job. And more than 100 companies are already running these tests right now. They're by a company called HireVue. More than 1 million job seekers have gone through the system. And, you know, this system is like becoming so widespread that even some colleges are teaching their students on how to prepare for these AI exams. But it's really unnerving because a lot of the AI researchers I talked to said they think it's kind of like pseudoscience. They feel like the science does not back up the ability of a computer to be able to look at you for 30 minutes and figure out, you know, how much personal stability you have or how good your communication skills are. And those are attributes that the computer-generated report card puts out for people. So people's careers are being decided by this imperfect system, and we don't even really know, what is the system looking for? What does the model employee really look and sound like? So there's some worries about job discrimination as well. Are they going to treat every person, every skin color, every accent, every gender the same, or is the system going to choose winners and losers based off a computer-generated idea of what the perfect employee looks and sounds like?
What is the looks part?
Yeah, what's interesting about that, per Drew's point, was who's going to be making the programming decisions for what the AI is going to look for? And for the most part, a lot of these techies are white bros living in Silicon Valley. So what are they going to be looking for in programming as the ideal worker, you know?
Yeah, like people program the algorithm, so the algorithm winds up being an extension of the people very, very often. But the idea that, yo, we need somebody that looks like the right employee, we got all kinds of laws that's supposed to prevent against that, right?
Yeah. Also, too, just strikes as a little lazy, right? Because if you're really reviewing someone's resume well, you're not going to have to use this to sort out the kind of the bad from the good, right?
Right. Right. No, 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 no. This is all bad. The future, all bad. All bad. But it also just feels like this isn't even about optimization, man. This is about people either A, being lazy, or B, like, I would feel like if I was in charge of hiring, would you trust the algorithm more than you trusted yourself? Like, where's the confidence? Anybody got no confidence in themselves? What's the confidence?
The second story also comes from tech.
My name is Peter Holly, and I'm a reporter covering technology at the Washington Post. My latest story is about a strange new effort to find the right face for a new fleet of humanoid robots. Now, the details surrounding this story are a little bit sketchy, so bear with me. Apparently in Britain, there's a firm called Geomic. They've been hired, they say, by a robotics company that they won't name. That company is looking for people to submit photos of their face. They say the purpose is so they can find the right face to place on their new fleet of humanoid robots that will span the globe. Now, apparently they don't want just any old face. They want a kind and friendly one, quote unquote. They haven't said if they want it to be a man or a woman, or young or old. There's really not many other details other than they want a human face to place on their robots. Aside from the potential ego boost of having your face plastered on a new army of global robots, there is another incentive. This company says it will pay you $130,000 for the licensing of your face, assuming it's selected. Once your face is on the robots, the company claims they'll be used as friends for elderly people, something that's already commonplace in Japan. We're assuming this isn't a prank, but in the age of the internet, you can never be too sure. Whatever it is, it's already inspired a lot of curiosity. My inbox is flooded with people from around the world seeking to submit images of their face. Not that this is surprising, but for $130,000, you can get people to do just about anything.
Would you want your face to be the face of our demise as a species?
Not for $130,000, I wouldn't.
I mean, you gotta have some pride about yourself, right?
Yeah.
Like, a little bit, right? You gotta have some pride about yourself. No, yo, man, I'm sorry. It's us against the robots.
I'm really gonna be interested to see what they come up with on this, because just like with Drew's story, all these people are gonna be applying, and then who's the desirable humanoid? You know, what are they looking for in terms of like a friendly face? What defines a friendly face to them?
Good point. I'll tell you this, chances are that they're not going to pick my face. I'm always going to have to explain to somebody that I'm okay.
Well, here's the thing that's also interesting too. People have different looks. Like, sometimes you be rocking the beard, sometimes you're rocking the goatee. If you were a humanoid robot, if they were modeling one after you, which look would you go for?
I go with the goatee.
Go with the goatee, traditional bow look.
Yeah, but I'm telling you right now, man, that thing ain't going to have no facial hair. That ain't what they looking for. That ain't what they want. It's not here. It's bad news. An army of humanoids. Shout out to MV Peter, by the way. Hadn't talked to him in a while.
All right, Bomani, so this last story comes from music. Now, the writer who said he was going to join us never sent me the audio, so I'll try and do a little synopsis here of my own. Last fall, Eminem announced the surprise release of his album Kamikaze, where the lead track, The Ringer, immediately attracted attention on social due to lyrics in which Eminem claimed he was visited by the Secret Service. At the time, the Secret Service refused to say whether agents had indeed visited Eminem, so BuzzFeed filed a FOIA request with the Secret Service to find out if the agents were really sent to speak with him. And this week, the agency turned over 40 pages of documents that prove that they did, in fact, interview the rapper. Bo, your thoughts?
Hey, man, I keep telling y'all, I mean, it's a free country and everything like that, but you need to be careful with what you out here saying about that man out here. They do come find you for that. They, like, in theory, they can't really be taking no chances with you out here talking like this. I'm just a little surprised they showed up at Eminem's house. Like, are we still COINTELPRO in it?
COINTELPRO in it? What do you mean?
You don't know about the COINTELPRO?
No.
Counterintelligence program, man. It's where they be out here, where the government back in the day was infiltrating, like, the revolutionary organizations to dismantle them from the inside, and they said they can't do that no more, but, you know, right? I'll just say that legally they were obligated to stop. But you think about, like, J. Edgar Hoover and all the files he had on cats like John Lennon and everybody else, you know? Is this how they see Eminem? As a potential threat to overthrow the government?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like over the summer when we were doing the book club about Jim Brown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's COINTELPRO type stuff. The only thing I got to say is, first of all, Jim Brown wasn't about the revolution, but I don't know how much of a revolution Jim Brown would have actually been able to, like, get cracking. Eminem, however, yeah, they be following him.
These newspaper associations just throwing out FOIA requests right and left.
Like, yeah, that was the thing. And I got where TMZ was coming from. They're like, yo, we want to see if they actually contacted him, right? Because Eminem put it in a verse. I want to see if they actually contacted him. I thought that's a good use of a FOIA. And then they got in there and they're like, oh, yeah. They definitely came and talked to him. I would pay all the money in the world to see what happened when Eminem met up with the FBI. You ever had the FBI call you to meet?
No.
All right, I've never had the FBI call me to meet. This never happened before. But one of my homeboys got a call once from the FBI asking if they could come holler at him. And that dude said he went through every change in the world behind that, where he was like, yeah, I can do that. I'll meet y'all at whatever it is, right? Like, he left his office. Like, he didn't return the call from home. He didn't return the call from his office. He just, like, he was doing everything he could to make sure that the FBI did not roll up anywhere near him. And then he caught up with them. And guess what? They was doing a background check on some dude had applied for a job with them.
Wow.
I still think he made the right call. And you know what my second call would be? I'd stop hanging out with whoever that was that put his name down for that background check. It sounded like he didn't get no warning about it.
So.
I know a cat. This is actually pretty funny. So I was hanging out with this one dude many, many years ago. And he may or may not, I can't exactly remember, but he may or may not have been in the horticultural sales industry. Anyway. He had a frat brother that he was talking about that he didn't hang out with no more. And we're like, well, you know, what's the problem with him? He the feds, man. I'm like, what you mean he the feds? He the feds. I'm like, come on, man. Like, why are you saying he the feds, right? And I ain't really think nothing of it. So then that frat brother, I knew him a little bit, and I saw him somewhere. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And we were just kind of talking to him. And I was like, yo, so who you work? Like, where you work? And he's like, oh, I work for the government. And he used to do stuff like go to Prague. He the feds. No question, he the feds. All right, now. So, you know, we normally do our thing with the social where we get on the voicemail and we ask y'all to contribute some little stories and we talk about them or whatever it happens to be. We got a little ambitious this time because I told a Michael Jordan story and I thought that maybe some of y'all would have Michael Jordan stories. But none of y'all had Michael Jordan stories. Like, literally none of you had Michael Jordan stories, or y'all are afraid to tell your Michael Jordan stories. Or gay, maybe they protesting because I told that Michael Jordan story and they couldn't hear it. And therefore they decided I couldn't hear their Michael Jordan story.
It could be. I mean, it's unreal what I'm getting offered at this point to release the Lost the Right Time tapes. Some guy commented that he's going to find me, you know, years from now in Houston selling the Lost tapes up my trunk.
Yeah, man, people like, I got to say, that device has turned out to be pretty handy.
These guys trying to get me fired. That's what they're trying to do.
There's also that. There's also that, right? Like, I just, like, that story wasn't even that salacious. I just kind of felt like, you know, y'all ain't need to know it all, but, you know, I was in the middle of a conversation.
Well, and then you got these cowards out here who are like, oh yeah, I got some stories. I got some stories. And then when it comes time, when we give them, you know, their platform to shine, they, get real quiet.
Yeah, it's real disappointing. It's real disappointing. But since they didn't come to us with their Michael Jordan stories, I guess we can talk about that new Kanye record. Now, Gabe, are you a Kanye guy?
Yeah, you know.
Let's be honest. I feel like me and you were the same boat. I was a Kanye guy. Right? He made it hard.
Yeah, he did. Took a wrong turn there.
He made it hard. And look, it wasn't always that easy, but he really came out here and he made it hard. And so Kanye put out this gospel album on Friday. And it's interesting the ways that people have responded to this gospel album. One, I mentioned something about the album on Twitter and somebody hit me and was like, oh, you fell for the okey-doke. I'm like, yeah, I fell for that okey-doke that cost me a grand total of 27 minutes. Look, man, I am a music person. This is what I do. And so I'm going to listen to the new Kanye, not as a, like, show of support or whatever it is, but this is, I mean, you guys have followed me for a long time. This is what I do. And so I checked out the Kanye record, and this was my description. Gabe, I don't know if you saw me say this, but this was my description. I said, it's really hard to make a gospel album that doesn't feel like anything. But here we are. I found that, like, it wasn't bad music. Like, as much as there's the, you know, as Kanye lost it or whatever it is, like, that Ye album that he put out last summer, that was cheeks. That was, that stunk. That's the one where he starts off, I have imagined killing you. You remember that?
Yikes.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I imagine killing you. I've imagined killing myself, so why wouldn't I imagine killing you? Because I ain't do nothing to you, that's why. How about that? All right, like, it was just all that, it was just like, kind of whatever. And so, I went and checked out the little gospel album, and understand this, I haven't paid any attention to the Sunday service or any of that stuff, and I'm also not offended by any of the stuff that he might be doing with that Sunday service or anything, because I'm not Christian, right? So I've had people like, Kanye, you know he wrong for being out here trying to make money off the Lord. And I'm like, yo, he better get in line. Like, no disrespect, but I mean, that he ain't the first person to do this. Like, this isn't a very particular affront that he is committing. Making money off God, one could argue, the modern definition of organized religion.
He did strike up a relationship with Jerry Falwell. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I did. But I don't think of Jerry Falwell as a religious figure. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Yeah, like I don't like that was, that's more in that other stuff that Kanye's into that make my bosses nervous when I talk about it. You know what I'm saying? So I listened to the record and it just did not move me at all. Now, here's the thing. As I said on here, I am not a Christian, but I can appreciate gospel music. I can't just sit around and listen to it all the time. I remember I used to date a very, very religious woman and I told her about how I liked a gospel song. And she was like, well, I'm surprised you don't go to church. Why would you like a gospel song? I'm like, yeah, I'm also not a gangster, but I like Snoop. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to like personally relate to this to get it going. By the way, is there like commercialized in the right way to put it, but I think you know what I mean. But like, is Christianity the only religion that's got all this music tied to it in that way where people like, you know, be out here doing the concerts in that way? Like, is there a Jewish equivalent of gospel anywhere?
Not on this commercial level.
Like Buddhist music? Do they make that? Like, is somebody out here with the hot Muslim jams?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. I don't know. I think it would be, I mean, I gotta say, man, it will help you carry your message along, man. If people got something to jam to. Like you can get me to go to church. It ain't necessarily my first choice, but they be in there jamming. You know, I'm down to jam, you know, a whole lot of the modern popular music that I love from back in the day was basically reworking the gospel tracks. I'm with that, man. Make that jam. Kanye's gospel don't jam. And as much as it was kind of like, you know, the idea of him doing this was understandably problematic to a lot of people, the man did do Ultra Light Beam, and Ultra Light Beam was the jam. Like, there was reason to believe that this was a space that he could traffic in, but the music felt insincere. And when I say the music felt insincere, I want to be clear that I am not talking about the sincerity of the music. like in the context as to whether or not I find his religious conversion to be sincere. Right? Like I really don't care about that part. But what gets me is that it just didn't feel, it didn't have any feeling to it. And by the way, you were a little too impressed with yourself when you out here like, yo, I'm going to get Malice and Kenny G on the same track. Why are you calling Kenny G? Huh? Huh? Like, say what you want about gospel music, man. If nothing else, it got some soul to it. You out here calling Kenny G. What the hell soul? What are you doing, Kanye? Like, what is it? Because in the end, I think what people are learning about all these changes that Kanye is going through right now and everything that he's done to offend all these people, we'd probably let a lot of it slide, those of us who are not inclined to let it slide, if the music was jamming. And it's been a long time now since he gave us, but Pablo was Life of 16, I mean, 16 was Life of Pablo. It's been a while since Kanye gave us music that was actually jamming. Homie, make your music jam. Like, you make your music jam, you might be able to pull off all these dastardly things that you are trying to accomplish. Just make the music jam. And the music as it stands presently simply does not jam. So you are impossible to like, even with people who like agree with the stuff that you're doing right now, right? But the music got to jam. And as it stands presently, that just isn't what is happening. But Gabe, want me to tell you something I heard?
Please do.
But you realize I'm telling you and not telling them.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds. Really? Ooh.
Yeah.
How'd you hear about that?
I know people.
Well, be extra creative with this one.
The other thing that's happened with this Kanye record is, hey, man, I seen a whole lot of white folks who write about music who suddenly know everything about gospel music. They ain't even heard Jesus' Love by the Commodores one time in their lives, and all of a sudden they get it. Guys, don't do that. Don't. No. This is time for you to listen. And it's okay for you to go ahead and listen in these moments, but this is time for y'all to listen, because I have seen a lot of so-called experts. So-called experts. No. If this ain't your lane, this ain't your lane. You don't have to act like your favorite artist did something that nobody else has ever done before. You don't have to act like Kanye invented something that was not there previous. He did not do that. And y'all know this ain't jamming. Y'all know it ain't jamming. Stop pretending like it's jamming. It ain't jamming. Because when we start pretending like things are jamming that aren't jamming, that interferes with the jams. Because we don't get no more jams. And the reason we don't get no more jams is because y'all are tolerating things that don't jam. I want some jams. I liked it better when Kanye gave us some jams. Help Kanye give us jams. Tell him this is whack. Anyway. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our new sponsor, Bowl and Branch. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Drew Harwell of The Washington Post. Check out his story on the face scanning algorithm, deciding if you deserve a job. Check that out at thewashingtonpost.com. Thanks to our man MV Peter Holly at the Innovations blog at The Washington Post. Check out his story on an army of humanoid robots looking for a human face. Ugh. Be sure to check out the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny, her dog. She's going to chat with Dominique Foxworth about week 9 of the NFL. Download and subscribe that. Check out The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.